That one right in the beginning of this long visit with Mr. Eastman inside where he we're reporting this Tuesday. It is the 11th of March, 75. Channel 1 right on the Tuesday, the 11th of March, 1975. Mr. Eastman with Gretchen and Wade. The first session was Mr. Eastman and Gretchen this Tuesday, the 11th of March, 75. System will be running in the red. By 1980, a recent study shows that nothing is done to correct it. The system will be running up a deficit of $10 billion a year.
That is
and
that
it all
to
zero.
Three, four fellows come down.
The
I was running
is to reduce
shop.
The
pension.
An unlikely
take them down there and
have some pensioners live.
500-600 feet.
I imagine them living on less.
Water pipe.
It's the third day of the month, and the most popular man in the neighborhood is the mailman bringing the Social Security check. There are 30 million.
Last day was gone a little bit.
On the third of the month, banks were crowded with pensioners.
That box of pensions was gone.
Congress has caused Social Security payments to balloon over the past 35 years.
You take that box of pensions?
But covering more
no,
people.
He says it's
adding
right there.
Payments, Medicare, checks for surviving dependents. And yet, for too many
so I went back up there, and
it is simply
I got back up there, and they were putting that water pipe together and running it down into this big farmhouse. Wasn't anybody living in it. Well, Vita, they looked uglier and blazes at me, you know, because I was coming up in there and looking around.
Oh, really?
Well, they had the box of fittings. They gave me the box of fittings, and I got out of there. I had an idea of just what was going on. You know, you're around a little bit. You can see them fellas. You can pretty near spot them.
Yeah.
And so we got out of there, and geez, it run along a month or so after that. The federal fellas went up there. Somebody tipped them off that they were running a still up there. Well, they went in up there and they busted it all up. Boy, they claimed it was the biggest operation that they'd ever got around and caught up with to break up.
Mm-hmm.
And they busted it all up. Well, down in there, we went up there the next day, this other fellow and I, just looking to see what they'd busted up. They had this great big boiler. Boy, it was an immense thing. And you know, they just took acetylene torch and just cut right straight around through it there, slot, so you stick your finger in. You know, that was unnecessary. They could have took that boiler, you know, and they sold that to some industrial plant, because that was big enough to heat quite a good-sized industrial plant.
Who done it?
Well, the revenue fellows. And there was all this other stuff there, you know, all of this copper pipes and tanks and stuff, and they just took and cut right through with these torches, and it laid right there, and they finally sold it to junk dealers. Those great big copper tanks, you know, and they just cut it around through and just ruined it, you know. Well, now they could have took that copper and took it right to the junk dealer, and they could have saved all of those sheets of copper in there, you know. Instead of that, they just took and cut that all right up.
Yeah.
Well, they went around, you know, and they didn't catch a fellow in there. And before they got to it, they knew that there were 6, 7, or 8 fellows there working. They got there, and they couldn't find a doggone one. Got looking around and down cellar, there was this hole cut in the cellar wall. Of course, up north there, you know, they have cellars under all the houses up there. They don't down here. And they had a tunnel dug right out through that cellar wall out there, 500-600 feet, right in under and come right out and under a big brush pile. And you know, them fellas all went out that tunnel, seen they got out and under that brush pile and got right off into the woods and got away.
Well, now that's all right. That's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I find myself on their side. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't be on the. I ought to be on the side of the law.
That's the way they got away.
Mister, what I've been wanting to ask you, I've been trying to get a hold of you ever since that Saturday when you all were had a big to-do down at Irons Lake. You sold fish or had fish dinners or something like that all day or all evening.
I wasn't in on that.
Why, you... you weren't. I hope you know that.
Well, where'd they have that? Well, was it a clubhouse or something?
I don't know.
Orange Lake or Cross Creek?
Orange Lake.
No, I wasn't in on that.
Well, nobody...
I used to be one of the head ones of the club down there, you know, but they kicked me in the behind, and I told them to go to the devil, and that was it, and I'd never been back.
Yeah, well, I thought you was getting back in. No, nobody told me you was at it. They just said you was over there somewhere, and then I heard they had the fish fry, and I just put the two together.
Yeah.
So that's what I was interested in. Well, now, let me tell you, Miss Eason, we started and got interrupted. You started telling us, I forget the connection of it, but we got into Old Man Becker. And I don't know, we got interrupted somehow or other. And I remember the first I knew was you said that Billy Brown had that mule.
Yeah. Had the mule got sick. Billy said he'd got to kill it and bury it. The old man Becker says, don't bother to bury it, he said. Just bring it right over there in my back lot and shoot it and let it go. He says the buzzards will eat it. Well, you know, that's one thing the buzzards won't eat is a mule.
Is that right?
There's a old mule laid over there for 2 or 3 weeks and got to smelling pretty good, you know, so the old man had to go out there and bury it.
Now, that's the first I'd heard about Old Man Becker, Mr.
Yeah. He was quite an old boy. He was up in Wisconsin there, up in the snow belt, where they got plenty of it right now. And they had a big ranch. And he and his wife got in an argument over something, and they didn't get along too good anyway. So he come down here. He took what money they had besides the ranch and come down here, and he left her with the ranch up there. Now he come down here, and he went buying land for taxes and one thing and another and all the cheap stuff. And at the time he first come down here, you could buy the property pretty cheap. And he got wind of it somewhere where there was some place over next to the coast that was for sale, and that the probability was that they were going to build a road up through there. So he slides right over there and he buys that property. Well, sure enough, inside of 3-4 months, they decided to put the road up through there, and they went looking for buying the right of way. Jesus, old man Becker went right to town on him. And that's where he was getting, he was kind of cute that way, you know. He was always buying land for taxes and one thing and another there.
That's exactly what my dad does.
Huh?
Exactly what my dad does.
He does?
Yeah. Sounds just like him.
Well, I better be careful how
yeah,
I talk. No, but that was the way that he was doing down here, you know. And then he got quite a lot of land, got raising... I don't know if he raised many watermelons, but he was raising squash and what the heck are them?
Eggplants.
Them eggplants. I was going to say them brown things. He got raising a lot of that. Well, I see them. One time they had a pile of eggplant up in there back of old Jay Dillon's, probably pretty near half as big as this house. Jesus, it was an awful pile of them they had in there. And they was boxing them up for to ship, you know.
You mean old man Becker had them?
He and Bob together. And then Bob went over to the outdoor theater one night and his house burned up.
Oh, really?
So the next day or two, I see the old man Becker, and I says to him, I said, Mr. Becker, haven't you got a place on some of your places that Bob can get into? I said, he ain't got no place to go. Well, now, Michelle, I'll tell you. If he'd have stayed up north with his mother where he belonged, he wouldn't be down here burning now. That's just the way he was a gruff talking old fella, you know.
Oh, was he?
Oh, yeah, he talked just like that.
Yeah. So you had to know him pretty well, or else you'd get the wrong idea.
We was up there on the side of the road one day. They were talking of widening out the road up through by my place, that Dungarving Road there. And there was a bunch of us out there talking. Then old man Becker come along, and he stopped, and he got out and passed the time of day with us a little while there. And finally, he see Mr. Sharkey there, you know, and Sharkey and his wife wasn't getting along too good. Old man says, you know, I had one of them damn women just like that up north there, he says. I just kicked her out, he says. I made up my mind that life was too short to live with something like that, he says. I come down here, and he says, I found one that was pretty good to live with. He says, now, he says, if that overcoat fits any of you boys, just put it on. Old Sharky was so mad he didn't know what to say.
Well, did Sharky put on the overcoat?
I don't know.
Well, Mr. Eastman, there weren't many of you all down there then. You pretty well knew what was going on.
Yeah.
Was he old enough to make a living then?
Well, Bob was around. Well, when I first knew him, he was probably 23, 24 years old.
Yeah.
You see, he married Jay Dillon's daughter.
Oh, did he?
And Jay Dillon and I married sisters. The second time around.
Oh, really? Yeah. You mean Jay Dillon lives over there, back of you, in front of you?
Mm-hmm. His wife and my wife are sisters.
Yeah? Well, you seeing much?
Mm.
But you used to.
Yeah.
Now this fella that I told you about, you didn't know about, was Bob Becker's brother. That the fella told me lives in Hawthorne, and he's a real big farmer. He don't do like Bob.
I don't know anything about him at all. I didn't know that Bob had a brother down here.
I didn't either.
He got a sister that's down here visiting right now.
Yeah.
And she's one of them little women, you know, about 3 feet across the shoulders.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, and about 3.5 across the hips here.
Yeah.
You have to go through the door sideways to get in.
Yeah. And that's Bob Becker's sister.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she is North Dakota.
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. she would thrive up in Wisconsin then, wouldn't she? Did Becker, old man Becker, keep on coming?
Well, he did up to about time he died. He came down the road one day and drove right up in front of the post office. He thought he had his foot on the brake. Instead of that, he had it on the gas. And he got right up there almost the post office. And he stomped what he thought was a brake, you know, and he stomped the gas. And that old truck jumped and went right through the window on the post office.
Was he a little hot-tempered?
I think he was about that time. They said he was. I didn't see him, but they said he was.
Well, let me tell you, Mr. Eastman, you know, Bob Becker, I have run into him, but I haven't got anywhere with him. And he's always just a little bit testy with me.
Yeah.
Peppery. Was his daddy peppery?
Well, sometimes. They said he was quite bad sometimes. They said he called the truck everything because it went through the window on the post office. And somebody said, hell, the truck ain't to blame.
Now, you weren't there.
I wasn't there.
But you heard about it. You didn't even see it.
No.
It went through the window of the post office.
Yeah, a cement block building, you know. Boy, he took them blocks right along in, window and all. I saw it after it happened there a couple hours.
Well, that's what I mean. That, you was right along there where you are now.
Yeah.
That's Orange Lake.
Old man Becker, did he live anywhere in the neighborhood there where Bob is?
No, you know where the orange shop is up top of the hill.
Yeah.
Well, he lived in that nice house right across the road there.
Oh.
Just back from the road a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, he built that house back in there.
Well, he was pretty well to do then.
Yeah. Yeah, he sold, I think it was 150 acres. To Buddy Huff up in back there for $150,000, and Buddy's still paying for it.
He sold it at the right time.
Yeah.
When would that be?
Oh, it must be 8-9 years ago.
Well, no longer than that?
No.
Yeah, he lived right on up to
it. Yeah.
Never did know about
it. Well, then they got a lot of land up in there yet. That Bob's widow, the old man's widow owned.
Oh, his widow's down there, still there.
Yeah. Yeah, she lives in that house yet.
Hi.
Howdy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
Hey?
Yeah.
You don't know anything about Bob Becker.
I sure don't.
I never thought, I don't either, but I never thought I would.
Who knows about it?
Let's see. Now, have you run into Bob Becker too? Let's see.
Have I run into him?
Yeah.
Oh, I get a little work done down there once in a while. I paid him $38.16 the other night for a new tire on my truck. See, that was a funny one, you know. I went down to get the truck inspected. Everything went through all right, and all at once the fellow says, wait a minute, he says. I said, what's the matter? Well, he says, look at that tire, it's got a cut in it. Darn nice looking tire, you know, but had a cut in it. I hit something in the road, see, that cut it. Well, I said, we greased that here about a week ago, and I looked at the tires, and the tires was all right. And he says, look at it now. He says, you got to have a new tire on that. And I said, all right. And I says, so I come right back up to Bob and got a new tire.
Yeah. Well, he did you a favor.
Yeah.
You didn't know your tire was cut.
No, I thanked him for showing it to me, because I said, geez, I don't want to drive a tire like that.
Yeah.
Well, he said, you got 30 days to get a new one. Well, I said, I won't wait 30 days, because just as soon as I get back up to Orange Lake, I'm going to have one.
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Eastman, we got off on some more things about old man Becker the other day, and I can't remember what they are. We had a lot of things going about him. I can't remember what they were.
All I know is this machinery around here, they'll say it's Bob Becker's machinery.
Yeah.
That's young Bob.
Oh,
we call him that old man.
Oh,
talking
now
about
that's
Bob's
one that I don't know anything about.
No. See, he owned that place, say, up across from the Orange Tower, and he built that.
Across from the Orange Shop?
Oh.
Back in there. He's got a lot of land back in there. Cuts way around back there. Goes way over back.
And his widow still lives there? So Bob, gosh, Peter. Now, that's putting him in a different light. He's, I just thought of him as an old Super 4 mechanic that used to farm and didn't know any better.
Well, I think that Bob got quite a little money out of his old man.
Yes. Well, that puts him in a different light, Mr. Eastman. He's one of the well-to-do people around here, ain't he?
Where's Bob's place?
And Bob had oh, I think he's got about 50 acres of squash in now. And some of them are right up just about ready to bloom. Well, the other day when it was cold, you know, they said that Bob was just walking right around in circles down there in the garage there because they said that it was going to freeze that night, see?
Yeah. And he had that squash up. I saw it. It was
yeah,
way up.
I saw it too.
I was kidding him about it. And you know how Bob stutters.
No.
You know, Bob says, but God, he says, you know, he says, about $40,000, he says, I lost. He says.
Oh, that fertilizer comes high now.
Yeah.
$200 a ton.
We used to buy that stuff for about $10.
Well, let me tell you, Miss Eaton, before you go, before we get going on something else, I want you to tell Gretchen just one new one. I'll give her a new one.
New what?
Just one new case. Just one that I haven't heard.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
She don't know what that is.
You know what that was? This here used to come out here about like that, you know, and you take them. And you take them, you know, and you hold them up like that, and you, when you come to some water, you know, that'll turn right down.
Mm-hmm.
And you can hang on to it, and it'll twist the bark right off in your hands if you get a good, strong stream of water.
Can anybody do that?
Hmm?
Can anybody do it?
No. A lot of people don't have electricity enough in their body.
Well, whatever it is.
Well, that's what they claim it is. I don't know.
Can you do it? Can you divine?
Yeah.
Can you?
I found a lot of it in my time.
Give us just one good case, Mr. Eastman.
What, about finding water?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you'll believe it.
Give us one we haven't heard.
I know, there was a farmer up home there, and he had a lot of money. And he bought this old farm up on the hill, and all the neighbors up there, it was a section that was called dry. And the neighbors all up there had been drilling wells, and they'd have to go down about 300 feet to get water. Well, and most of them was kind of poor, you know, and really couldn't afford that. See, and they were still making payments on there, getting their water. Well, this old rich guy, he bought that farm up there, and they kind of laughed at him when he bought it. Well, he said he was going to fix it up, do something with it. He didn't just know what he was going to do with it. He's going to build a new barn up there and one thing or another. So he come to me one day and wanted to know if I'd go up and see if I could locate any water on there so they could drill a well. So I got two or three crotch sticks and I went up with him. We traveled around up there for quite a while, and finally I come right over back to the corner of the barn, of this new barn that they were building. Boy, that thing had an awful pull to it. Well, I went back around, and every time that I'd come back there, she'd pull right down. Well, I says to George, by gee, I believe there's water right there, and I don't think you got to go too deep to get it. Well, all them other ones around there are down about 300 feet. George says, we'll have to go down, he says, same as them other ones. But he says, I'll get this fella up there. I can't think what the well driller's name was. Come up there, says, and see if we can drill a well there. And I drove a stake in there right where he wanted him to drill it. Well, you know, they went down 35 feet and they struck all kinds of water. And the water come right up within about 3 feet of the top of the ground.
Huh.
Well, I put on two pumps onto it. Pump an inch and a quarter streams of water. And you know, we could lower that down just 10 feet from the top of the ground. Stay right there, and we left them pumps run for 2 days right there, and the water stayed right there 10 feet in the ground.
Huh.
Now that was a funny thing, you see. Now this old fellow had all kinds of money. He could afford it to went down there same as them other ones was. And them other ones there, I often wondered if there wasn't some place on their property there where they wouldn't have had to went so deep. Never knew.
You never tried it out on their place?
No, they never asked me, so I didn't bother.
And that pointed to the exact spot.
Yeah.
How about that?
No matter how hard you hold it.
Huh?
No matter how hard you hold
it. Well, to twist the bark right off, right in your hand.
Any old stick do? It'd have to be a particular kind.
Well, I always use either apple or plum.
Because they was more flexible?
Well, they claim that you gotta have something with a seed.
Done quite a bit of that, Mr. Eastman?
Well, I'm busy all the while.
He did a whole lot of that. That's a high priced box, Mr. Eastman. And it's the wrong size.
I didn't ask you to pay for it.
Well, you done told me. You told me what it cost, and I didn't pay you.
Well, that's better. I didn't expect any pay for that one.
Well, let me tell you, the material costs $1.50, and you put in a couple of hours on it, so there's no way of getting around it.
Well, heck.
After all, it wasn't your idea. Let me see.
It's the wrong size?
Oh, yeah, but it serves a purpose. I can tell what it's like. You know what I've been trying to find? Is some luggage that I can put some stuff in with a little weight to it. And you know, I can't find any luggage. You know, in the Army we used to have those old foot lockers.
Yeah.
And then they had one with a handle on it, smaller than a foot locker, but it's made about the same way. But you don't find anything anymore except those little plastic.
I think I got one down there.
Yeah, I borrow it. Except you've got stuff packed in it.
I don't think so.
Is it leather or canvas or what?
Oh, it's wood with some covering on it. I don't know, is it some metal or what? I forgot. I haven't seen it in quite a little while, but I think I know where it is. I think it stands on the end without anything in it.
Is it a kind of foot locker?
I think it's a little bit smaller than a footlocker.
I don't know whether would the airplane take a footlocker?
I don't know.
That's a good one.
It'll take anything as long as you pay for it.
Mm-hmm. I think probably.
Oh yeah, you'll take a horse.
If they can put it in one of their containers.
Yeah.
Gretchen doesn't know what you do. He keeps us all in business. You see, the stove won't work, and Miss Eastman gets it working.
Mm-hmm. He's magic all over. Huh?
All over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the lights won't work, you see, and I get he can fix it. And the source of it, I might say, if I had his equipment, I could do it too, but I couldn't. But I want you to see that equipment he got out. Except if you open one of those drawers, you be careful. Because there's an overflow.
He can close his eyes and put his hand in those places and find the screw you want.
Yeah.
Almost. I've seen him do it.
Jack of all trades.
I put in a lot of big entrances, you know, for trailers and one thing and another. I put in one that was, well, I've done a lot of work for her. Her name is Green, Jerry Green. She's an old maid, and she did live down in Millwood. But she bought a chunk of land up, they call it Archer, but it's quite a ways from Archer up in there. It's back on that Grassy Lakes Road. You know where Grassy Lakes Road is. And she bought this big double wide trailer, 24 by 60. And they put it in up there. Well, I went up and set it up there and hooked up the plumbing to it. And she had a well drilled and had to dig a ditch from the well to the trailer. And we had to put a pole in over here. And I dug a ditch from the pole over to the trailer here and put I bought aluminum wire the same as what we use here in Marion County and put it in up there. It cost $91 for the aluminum wire. Well, the inspector come and looked at it, the same inspector as what looked at this entrance out here when I put it in. Passed it all right. Power company come to hook it up, and they wouldn't hook it up. They said that there was a new ordinance gone in up there in Alachua County that you can't have an aluminum wire. It's got to be all copper.
When did that happen?
Well, this was 6 or 8 months ago.
What power company?
It's a...
Not Florida Power?
It ain't the Florida Power, no. If it had been the Florida Power, well, they'd have hooked it up. Yeah. But what's that all?
Clay.
Clay. Yeah, Clay. And they wouldn't hook it up. And they told me to call such a number in Gainesville and ask for Mr. Teffarelli. Well, he's one of them hot-headed Italians. And, you know, I called him and I told him what I wanted and what they wouldn't hook it up in one thing or another. And he started reeling it right off to me, you know, about why I thought of the idea of putting copper wire in up there, that they'd got to have everything, it'd got to be copper instead of aluminum. And he kept reeling it off to me, so, and finally I said to him, well, now, just who am I talking to that's got a right to talk to me the way you're talking to me? Well, I am Albert Teffarelli, he says, and I'm the head electrical engineer for Alachua County, and what I say goes. Well, I said, I didn't say it didn't go, but I said, I didn't think it was necessary for you to call me off the way that you did. But I said, we want everything right, but I said that the difference in the price between the copper and the aluminum, I said, will run that poor woman bankrupt. Well, he said, if she's got the money to buy a beautiful trailer like they tell me that she has, she's got the money to hook it up right. Well, all right. So, I had to go down there and pull that aluminum wire all out, and I went down to Old Cal, the wholesaler down there, and got copper wire. The copper wire cost me $378.
And you had to pay it.
Huh?
You had to pay it.
Yeah, $378 for the copper wire against $91 for the aluminum.
Same size?
No.
No, your copper wire takes one size
less
under the aluminum, see, because aluminum only carries 80% as much as the copper. Well, then I had to run four wires instead of three from the box in the trailer out through to the meter box and from the meter box up to hook on the line.
Why four?
You got to have one for to ground your electric fixtures and everything.
Best easement?
I can't see that myself. I've been doing electrical work for over 50 years. And that was the first time that I ever knew that you've got to run like that, because we always grounded your fixtures with a ground wire from your wiring here into your electric box. You see, your modern electric boxes have got a ground on one side for your regular ground and a ground on the other side to ground your fixtures. You see, and then those two are hooked together right in your box. You've got to have a ground from that to go right clear out to the line. Number six wire. Mm. It's got to be a green, and if the entire part of it ain't green, you put some green tape on the ends of it so it can be identified.
Yeah. I see you got the regulations anyhow.
Well, I've worked under the code all these years, and I never had but one place that wanted me to do something against the code. And I refused to do it, and I got fired off from the job.
Down here? I never heard about that.
Old Monty Harlem down there at the lake, you know, she fixed up that place down there?
Yeah.
And they put this brick veneer on the outside. And she wanted that meter box set inside of the brick veneer so that the meter wouldn't show. There'd be just a round hole in there and your meter set back in there. And that's a direct violation of the code, and I wouldn't do it. And I went down to the power company about it. And the head guy down there said, well, if she runs the wires out to the pole, he says, for underground service, we'll hook it on. Well, I said, I'm not going to do it because it's right against the code. And I went out to the truck and got the code book. I had it in the truck with me that day. And I showed him in there, right where it was. And do you know, there was another fellow that put that in there just as she wanted it, and they got the power company hooked it up.
Yeah.
And I went down and I talked to the fellow that was head of the power company before this fellow got in down here. He retired. What the heck was it? Teston. And then I talked to Teston. And Teston said, if you write into the code authority about that, he says they'll put, his name is gone from me now, the fellow that's the boss down here now, he said he'll go on the carpet. And the chances are he'll lose his job. Well, I said, geez, I don't want to make trouble for anybody. I said, if that's the way that she's bound to have it, and they've hooked it up, I said, let her ride. If the damned house burns up, why, it won't be anybody's fault but theirs. Because the code specifies that when you put a meter on a brick house, a brick veneered house, it tells you just how you've got to fasten your wiring onto it.
He put this big box in there,
yeah.
And I tell you, he had little screws and little wires all over that place.
Yeah, for a long time.
For a long time. And I'd say, you know what you're doing. Yep, he did. Golly.
Eastman, I want Gretchen to see you.
Huh?
I want you to show her one or two of those things in your truck out there. Not everybody will see something like that.
What do you want to see out there? Jesus, I don't know what the heck to do about this.
Well, just stick it in your billfold.
Yeah, it takes a while. I didn't expect anything like that.
Miss Eastman, I've been looking all over this country trying to find something that'll close it.
Channel 1 over, and the end of visit Mr. Eastman, Wade, and Gretchen. This Tuesday, the 11th of March, 75, and I'm setting it up for Gretchen when she comes out of the headquarters where she's been typing for an hour and a half. This Tuesday, the 11th of March, 75.
But there you have a general idea of what I can do.
Oh, you don't need to remember all that stuff. You can't remember all that.
I know. Sometimes I wish I could. I can always just get the skeleton, just the gist of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that wouldn't be human.
Yeah, and I didn't. You'll see in there. I just sort of made things up. I didn't know who. I think Mr. Bennett's mule. Was that Mr. Bennett's mule? I wasn't sure about that. But you'll tell. You can
tell.
Sure.
You remember that mule, right?
Yeah.
Billy Brown had a mule. And, but you got the gist of it.
What do you think?
Oh, water.
How about the milk?
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
That's
uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah.
I bet you like fresh
pants. Yeah.
Okay.
You get the gist of it. kind of the gist of it. I see, I never asked Mr. Eastman a question except when I got stalled. Generally, he doesn't respond to questions.
Oh, yeah?
He just give him a lead.
Let him take it off.
Let him go ahead. So when I say, I pick it up, you see, I use your term. I said, now that gist you pick it up.
Go ahead and read it.
No, I want to just hear the letter.
Oh.
I'm not a good reader.
Oh, I see. Well, you know, this is really something. I feel, you know, around this table with this red and white tabletop and everything, I feel you sit inside home.
Yes.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Yes?
Me too. It feels like South Dakota?
Well, yeah.
Yeah. It's South
Dakota. South?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's enough, isn't it? That's far enough.
Mother noticed that she walked was directly straight,
mm-hmm.
And Mother said, "How brisk you walk." She said, "That's peculiar. I look as if I have a purpose, but it's that kind of walk."
Does that come from South Dakota?
I don't know, but I like it.
I went back there for Christmas, looking for snow and not a drop, not one flake. And then as soon as I got back down here, it blizzarded up there. It was in a big trouble. Yeah. I talked to my mom and dad all the time. He said, "When are you coming down here?" You know? He said, "I'll be coming down pretty soon. I can't wait."
Mm-hmm.
Get down here.
Oh, they're
going to
come see you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's more like it.
Mm-hmm. And they want me to come back home, but I really like Greensville a lot, and I'd rather stay around here if I could.
A little while.
Mm-hmm. A while.
Now, Mr. Eastman, I want to hear a little bit about Mr. Eastman.
Tell me that, behind you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, come on.
Mr. Eastman. You don't have to thank this fellow.
Mr. Eastman. He reminds me, like I said, of a gypsy. He really does. Somebody who can pack everything into his truck, you know, and just do anything anybody needs done. Just a sort of a mechanical type thinking man. But he's got a lot of some mechanical type thinking people aren't very human or aware of stuff, but he seems like he was. And I can't believe that he comes out here and just sits and talks. It seems like he's got all the time in the world.
Yeah.
Nobody's hanging around. Anything.
He won't go home. His wife won't let him. doesn't like for him to come up here. He won't come home.
Where does he live?
Down the road.
Mm-hmm. Even his wagon looks like a gypsy wagon, where it bounces on the road. Crazy. He's a cutie, isn't he? My grandfather has a big knot on his head, like here, and he looks like Jimmy Durante. He's got a great big nose and smile on his head. And he always would wear this blue overall thing and go down to the Schnitzel Bump, which was the town bar, and sit out on the bench with all his cronies there. And everybody had his blue overalls and his cap that he was wearing. That's exactly what he reminded me of, like the old fellas that my grandpa used to always go down and spend all his time with, playing pool and drinking beer.
Well, you know where he came from. From upstate New York.
Oh, really?
So he belongs in the same world as your grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
He was brought up with your grandfather.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's always fun. After you walk around the university for a while, it seems like everybody wears T-shirts and jeans, you know, and everything. It's nice to get out someplace where they don't have books all under their coats, and everything is more real.
Well,
feel at home.
You see, Mr. Eastman, would you say is a bookish man?
No, except for his code book. and be silent.
Well, that's something.
Mm-hmm. He's lit. You can tell that.
How do you mean lit?
He can read and write.
Oh, you mean he's a little on the borderline?
I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know. It's been a while, probably, since he's read a book, didn't he say?
Well, let me tell you.
Sure.
You
I just guessed.
You want me to give you a little thing? One of the beautiful talks we had here, the former dean of the Washington Cathedral here, was one of my old friends who used to stay here with me. He was out here with me 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
He had the horses, took care of my tapes and things, you know. And in the course of it, he used a little Latin. You scratch my back, I scratch yours. Now, what is that in Latin? Well, that's what he used. That's what he used. He said that, and then he said, no, that's not English, that's Latin. And you know what Mr. Eason did?
What?
He sang a little song. He buys me by Zola's door, and he used to call it.
I wish I could know it. I should know. Is he German then? He is.
No, he just said German in high school. The bib overalls disguise it, don't they?
Mm-hmm. It makes me want to sing a song. Do do like me and Harrison. You know that song?
Never.
Yeah. It's one of my favorites. I didn't learn that in high school. My grandma.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you sing that to me.
I will.
And get him to sing you the other one.
Okay.
He will know.
Uh-huh. Sure. It's one of my favorites. Everybody knows that song. If they're even slightly German. Mm-hmm.
Now, your grandfather, with his bib overall. Bib overall.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know.
And in his cap.
Mm-hmm.
With a bill?
Mm-hmm. He started out when he was 17, married my grandma. She was 16.
Is this enough light for you?
Sure.
You don't like this?
It's a fun, it's good enough. Said, moved out to this little farm, raised 6 kids, and now he's worth $1 million, my grandfather. Just, he was the first man in the area to get rubber tractor tires, and they all thought he was nuts, you know. But he went ahead and started giving Maria, which is like based on molasses type, they give it to the cows, it's minerals and stuff like that. He was the first one to use that. Got into a huge business, cattle business out there now, and now he's just laying back. But he started out just dirt poor, worked really hard all his life.
In South
Dakota? Yeah, it's just where Mapley's called.
Mm-hmm. He's there now.
Mm-hmm. Yep, good man. Knows more about Florida politics than I do. Every time I go back there, he's so politically aware. He says, well, what about what's the what and what and what? I say, I don't know. He says, see, I know more about it than you do, and I'm up here in South Dakota. And that's the way he is. He watches the news and reads, and he's just up on everything. He was saying out with Nixon for a long time before it ever started. And he's sort of like a gadfly in the community in a way, because he's always talking politics and out there in a real Republican state, you know, and he's always in there stirring up trouble. And Albert Shemp is his name. And,
say it again.
Albert Shemp. Shemp. He did that.
Where'd you get your name?
Gretchen is German for Margaret. I don't know where I got it.
I mean,
Bray? I was married. Yeah. That's my.
You were married?
Mm-hmm. I'm 25.
No, I don't
really. Uh-huh, I am. I'm 25. I'm thinking about getting married again.
Uh-huh. So, how long have you been married?
I was married for 2 years. Since I've been married, since last Christmas, no, Christmas before that.
Oh.
Uh-huh. He was going to school up at Yale when we were first married, in the divinity school. And he was on a Rockefeller, and it didn't turn out right for him. He thought that was going to be a real nice place for what was happening in theological circles nowadays, but it turned out to be just dogma and rigmarole, and he was really unhappy. And then we came down here together, and he was in the English department, and he didn't like it at all. He thought it was too easy, and he was just lost what he wanted to do, and I wanted to stay. And so he went to Hong Kong, and where he is right now, he's teaching in Hong Kong, and I stayed here. This happens, I guess, every once in a while, when, you know, your life just goes in different directions. It happened. He's a good man, but
no,
I didn't. No, and he's all still corresponding and everything. But I wanted to stay in school, and he didn't, so that was that.
Theology is a tricky subject.
Yeah.
I mean, it plays tricks on you. Well, Mr. Eastman, but your grandfather, he's still there?
Mm-hmm. He's 75.
Well, that's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Just Miss Eastman, see.
Oh, was that right? No wonder. Mr. Eastman is neat because he'll just look right at your face, you know, and talk to you eye to eye. And, I don't know, I'd get a big feeling like maybe he's an enormous jokester. I bet he is.
Oh,
a practical joker from way back. I bet he is.
Yeah.
But he would never do any harm, I'd say.
No, that's right.
All the talks he did to you, he did today, you see, he did it with his great good humor. I wish I could see it like that.
And he's so cute, God said, now tell us something new about that. You know, he just twinkled, you know.
He didn't. He told us that.
I don't think you know that
one. You'd heard that one before.
Oh, he told that one at the time, but he embellished it today.
Yes, for your sake.
Yeah, I think
so.
He
was a good audience.
Yeah.
Yes, he was fine for the
audience.
Audience.
Well, now, you see more in Miss Eastman than you do in your grandfather.
Say that one more time, I'm sorry.
You see more in Mr. Eastman. You see him better, see more than you do in your grandfather.
No. No, you know, that's not true. Ain't ever going to be anybody I see as much as my grandpa. That man, my grandpa, I wish you had him here. Now, there's a storyteller for you. I'll tell you. And honest and stalwart and hardworking.
But you never even set him down.
My grandfather?
Yeah.
Not to tape recorder, for sure.
Well, on piece of paper.
I suppose I do vicariously in my own writing, you know, but not. I don't know, it would be hard to capture something like that. I hadn't even thought about it. Sometimes I put in my own writing things that I remember them saying to me when stuff, but I never credit it to them, you know, Albert Schimpf, anything like that. My writing. I write folk tales and little stories, like stories to be illustrated. Illustrated children's books and things like that. One I did recently was based on a Nebraskan folk belief about this monster that's supposed to live in the lake in Nebraska, in Hay Springs, Nebraska. And I have one now that Frau Strauss is considering. It's about two families that feud and wipe each other out. And they're considering that, but I don't have anything published yet. Oh, it might be years and years and years, maybe never, but it's always fun. And I have another one that,
You have a little pig thing.
No.
Oh,
mm-hmm. Another one about, it doesn't matter, but a friend of mine is doing the illustration for that, and that's a lot of fun. But all in all, I only have about 5 complete stories that I would ever show to anybody.
So your very best subject you haven't even touched. granddaddy, your grandpa.
What do you want me to tell you about him? Anything you know? I wish you could see him. I wish you could. I can't put it into words.
I don't want to see him. I want to see him through your eyes. Oh, what
yeah.
Did it do me to see him?
Oh, well. I'll remember this once, but in the farm where we used to live, my sister and I were the only people in the house, and she was real little. Maybe I was 5, maybe she was 3, something like that. And we were cutting out pictures from the Humpty Dumpty books, and we heard this funny scratching sound, and we looked all around, this big rat in the waste paper basket, tin basket, crawling up the side. And she turned around and took off down the hill to the barn where my grandpa was milking. And jumping up and down, there's a rat in the, and he took her on his knee, you know, and squirted milk into his mouth like that, and squirted the cats and got her all worn down to it and everything, and then took her back up there, and me too, scared, and showed us the rat and talked about it. And he was just like that. So matter of fact about everything, like I remember this exactly. How when he killed his first snake, you know, or the first snake I'd ever seen killed, how he just killed him, blunt out, just like that, and never made any excuses or hid anything or flowered anything up for children or anything. Just was always he was just whatever he said, you could believe it and trust it and know. He was just an extremely fine, what would you say, dependable father type figure. Yeah, I remember any time he expects a lot, you know, and every time I go home or some place like that, he's always guiding me because I don't use my brain well enough, and I have to think these things out. What do I know about economics, and what do I know about the political situation, and what do I know in my few years, and always very kindly pointing out that I have so much more to learn. He's a great guy. Smokes too much. And my grandma's always at him to stop his smoking. He won't do it. He goes, sneaks out in the car, takes a ride in the country to smoke. He's so crazy. Has trouble with his shoulders, so that he's got to sleep in a funny way with his arms propped up like this. Losing his hearing quite a bit, and it annoys him. He always says, "You don't have to shout at me." But he can't hear with Dean. He hasn't worked now for some time. His only son, owns this ranch where he gives him the cattle farm there. And he's got a house in town, but he goes out there all the time to kind of oversee things.
That's cattle farm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know. There was one time we had about 10,000 head. It was pretty, as far as I could tell, it was big. And it seemed very big. Yeah, but it's not that big anymore. His son has gone off into this Maria Food stuff I was telling you about, and he's a dealer in the area. So that's what he does most of the stuff, these big trucks he drives around.
But now, your parents are not in the farm.
No. My mother was his second oldest, and the rest of his family settled down in farming situations, but not my mother. She had one, she moved up to the cities with my father, and then that didn't work out too good, and so she came back to live with my mom and dad, and then with her mom and dad, and then then she went into politics, and that's how I got to grow up in Pierre, the capital, because she was the assistant secretary of state and stuff like that. And then she worked for the welfare department for a long time. And right now, both she and my father, my stepfather, are real estate brokers in Sioux Falls. Mm-hmm. They're not. My mom said she can remember sitting in the kitchen window and trying to play the piano on the windowsill and saying, "Boy, if I ever have any kids, they're going to be able to play the piano." And that's what she was really into, like, giving us more city opportunities. Like, both my sister and I took ballet lessons and piano lessons for many years, and always had very nice clothes and everything. It was more, I always got the feeling that she was sort of boosting me out of what seemed to her kind of a too much of a sheltered farm life without enough opportunity. And I appreciate it for sure. But I still have big reverence for coming out of farms. Sometimes I feel weird because running around in academic circles, I'd never pick up the references, and I never can converse about all the books you're supposed to have read and all the movies and everything. But I still, when it comes right down to it, I'd rather have grown up with one library, you know, way done, than to have to go through all the other stuff that a lot of my friends my own age haven't grown up in the city. Seems nervous and rotten, competition upbeat. So.
Mm.
Yeah.
What'd you say?
And, oh, competition oriented, but city life seems to instill young man crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes them glib rather than not as much substance as you say.
Mm.
Makes them tackle. Well, you think your grandpa keeps you. One who keeps you away from stupidity.
No, I wouldn't go back there because my dad is excited about getting into the real estate business. Every time I go home, it's, you should take up my business. And it's wonderful. I'm glad that it's made him so happy and everything, but it's just, I just wouldn't fit into it. I couldn't do it. He has me work for him every once in a while, show houses and stuff, and it's just not for me. It's boring. Boring as heck, so I don't want to do that. And also, it gets a little tangled.
Well, you can see it through his eye.
Mm-hmm.
Can you?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. He had, eight children, I think, in his family, and potatoes and the whole thing, and a hard, puritanical type father, a lot of religion and stuff like that. And when he married my mom, I was in fourth or fifth grade, and he didn't really have much experience with how to raise children and stuff. And by that time, we were all off and running, and he never has felt like he could control us or anything like that. And it's probably true. And we always did kind of, my sister and I, team up on him and get our own way and stuff. And we have a lot of family, just typical family schmaltz. My sister has a little girl who lives with my mom and dad right now. She's four, and she's not married. And so that's always a, why don't you get your sister to do this and such? And they love us so much that it's almost too much, you know. It's like they hover. And it's not exactly balanced.
Push you?
Yeah. Maybe not intentionally, but like, why do you do this? It makes your mother so unhappy. And he's not, well, he's a, what's the specialist, or whoever call a depressive maniac, manic depressive. And sometimes he has to be, my stepfather has to be sedated and kept in hospital for a while. So he's very touchy, and you have to be real careful, and he's not exactly always rational. And so these, what seems like you're trying very, very much, everybody, to work together, all of a sudden, just the floor falls right out, and there's not no rational, earthly way that you can get things worked out. His viewpoint is, I guess I really admire him, but this is probably as close as I'd like to be.
Well, your grandpa pushes you.
In a kindly way, you know, and in an affirmative way.
You like it?
Yes.
I push you.
Yeah. You sure did.
You didn't know what it was.
Well, it was vague. It was vague, but it was all right.
Well, he went home shaking his head.
Did he?
Yeah. He thought it was just marvelous. He'd never seen anyone do that.
Oh, really? That typewriter. Boy, oh boy, do you type on that?
Not too well.
You can milk cows with hands like that, though.
Yeah. You have liquor?
Yes, indeed. It spoils you.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, you see, I'm conditioned to use mechanical ones, and I can't use the liquor.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to have to change.
have a nice house on East University in 9th Street. Big brown house. It's real nice. High ceilings and a fireplace and a piano that 3/4 of the keys actually play. And, nice house.
And now, while this is now, what I've learned, and I've had a number of promising young people about your age that I've learned from them. And what I've learned from them, I never knew. You see, I had that academic life from the time I was almost your age or younger, and. More and more, you see, I got into the thesis type of work where you can't long for months. And actually, I don't know, it's just pure luck, pure accident. I don't know what it was, the fate that ever preserved me, rescued me from that. And what we found is that the experience, while it's warm, is time you should look at it. And you don't try to put it in any mold. You just look at it, let it mold itself. So you came up with nice little statements about Mr. Eastman, and you didn't make it clear that they were understood. I'd make them a little bit more than that, just you know, not heavy statements, just easy. That he's like this is not quite, you know, you can't quite get a hold of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can start out with that.
Stress.
Yeah, well, it's concrete, but it's nice. But you know, you can start out with it. It's nice, and you
mm-hmm.
think.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, as you go along, you can. But if you make a strong statement, it'll give them a black eye. Those strong statements, bruise. What you want is the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And take it while it's warm. Now, you just follow my cue that I picked up from the other people I've worked with. A little bit more on this easement, or else you can use the tape. But even so, you want to, you know, not be held back.
Okay.
It's not long. So you could transcribe it in an hour, probably. And then you could see what happened there, give you something to hold on to. And you could work on that, putting in the gestures, or the, you know, the emotions while they're in your mind.
The only gestures, consistent gestures I saw was this stuff on the table. Does he have some more? I can't remember now.
Yeah, he has
one. Of what?
That's on here. And, you see, this is a little different from what you've been doing, and it'll rest you.
I haven't been saying myself, though, believe me. He's going to know. That was probably the nicest master anybody ever got. I mean, just what I wanted to do.
Are you celebrating?
Can I come tomorrow? I have a couple more classes. Oh, wait, I can come tomorrow afternoon, same time. 2:30, 3. Okay.
But don't let anything push it out of your mind.
Oh, you still got class?
Yeah, just tomorrow.
Let me tell you, some fella bumped into your car. And they bumped out on your face like that.
I wonder who that was.
And it's funny the insurance around.
Yeah, well, see, my financial situation is another thing. I haven't been able to even get insurance on that poor little car. I shouldn't tell, should I? Since it's against the law. But anything. any day now. Fixing him up. He's a good little car. He's got close to 80,000 miles on him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
you
can take it by in the morning. you want to take it to the beach up yet? Could you take it? It's a taillight. It just got a new one and put it in.
I think so.
Take it
to
the VW.
But would you have to take it to the VW to get it?
No, I suppose.
The VW, somebody has to get it from the VW.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a friend, I'm sure, who could put it in for me if I had got around to it. I'll mention it. Then.
Well, I'm going to tell you, if you're in no hurry, just let it go until you get my keys from out.
Do you have to have it to drive at night?
Well, you would eventually.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't realize that. I didn't even know it was gone. It must have just happened.
Well, you see, I'm back out. And I didn't notice the little car. It was out of my
mind. He's not teasing me, is he?
No.
No.
No, it's fine.
Oh, no. I didn't send any good advice. I don't want to go ahead and let
you go. Usually we pull up, you know, on the side of the
You made me think I drove in with it like that. You could have told
no,
me
I didn't
that. I believed you.
No.
He was... No, I thought you understood. No. Oh.
It can happen, though, under the parking lot and
yeah.
on the street.
And in the VW, that thing just sits out like that. You know,
yeah.
it just sits up to the first thing to hit there is. Well, I don't know how this no-fault insurance goes, but we've got all the insurance that you can count.
Thank you, that was a good supper.
Well, I sorry, heat it over for you. But
I want to read a little something before you go. But I knew that book I wrote. Now, you see, you get interested in different things. I wanted to go and look at a place right about the middle of the island. I like this. About the middle of the island that I found when I was exploring. So we started and soon got to it, because the island was only 3 miles long and a quarter of a mile wide. This place was a tolerable long steep hill, a ridge about 4 foot high. We had a rough time getting to the top. The sides were so steep. And the bushes so thick. We tramped and come around all over it. By and by, I found a good big cavern in the rock. Most up to the top on the side towards Illinois. The cavern was as big as two or three rooms bunched together. Jim could stand up straight in it. It was cool. Jim was for putting our traps in there right away, but I said we didn't want to be climbing up and down all the time. Now here's what I wanted. Daytime we paddled all over the island in the canoe. It was mighty cool and shady in the deep woods, even as the sun was blazing outside. Now, hello, you, but it didn't budge, so I hollered again, and then Jim says, the man ain't asleep, he's dead. He went and bent down over it, you see. It's a dead man. I didn't look at him at all. Jim threw some old rags over him. But he needed it, didn't it? I didn't want to see him. There was heaps of old greasy cards scattered around over the floor. An old whiskey bottle. And a couple of masks made out of black cloth. And all over the walls was the ignorantest kind of words and pictures made with charcoal. There was two old dirty calico dresses and a sunbonnet and some women's underclothes hanging against the wall and some men's clothes, too. We put the lot into the canoe. It might come good. There was a boy's old speckled straw hat on the floor. I took that too. And there was a bottle that had had milk in it, and it had a rag stopper for a baby to suck. We would have took the bottle, but it was broke. And there was a seedy old chest, an old hair trunk with the hinges broke. They stood open, but there wasn't nothing left in them that was any account. The way things were scattered about, we reckoned people left in a hurry and weren't thick so as to carry off most of that stuff. We got an old tin lantern and a butcher knife without any handle. And a brand new Barlow knife worth 2 bits in the store. And a lot of tallow candles. And a tin candlestick. A gourd. And a tin cup. And a ratty old bed quilt off the bed. And a reticule with needles and pins and beeswax and buttons and thread and all such chalk in it. And a hatchet and some nails. And a fish line as thick as my little finger with some monstrous hooks on it. And a roll of buckskin. And a leather dog collar. And a horseshoe. Vials of medicine that didn't have no label on them. And just as we was leaving, I found a tolerable good curry comb. And Jim, he found a ratty old fiddle bowl. And a wooden leg. The staff was broke off of it. But barring that, it was a good enough leg. Though it was too long for me, and not long enough for Jim. And we couldn't find the other one. We hunt it all around. And so take it all around. We made a good haul.
Isn't he something? He really is. I had a professor who read a section out of that, and big tears rolled down his eyes. It's a guy who was just making things all right.
Well, now you see, is that little tractor drove out there when he's in the truck. I wish. I would just give anything if I could do justice to that.
Yeah.
It gets me.
Okay. Write that down.
It's just pure treasure.
Yeah. That old, what do you call this thing? It's not a crowbar. Isn't
that?
That
little,
wrecking bar. Wrecking bar, okay. And that's that story he told about that wrecking bar that he got for 10 cents in here.
Yeah. I've seen it.
Oh,
yeah. It does have old metal in it,
indeed. I wish
right.
You could have seen him. You were busy looking at the things, but I was busy looking at Mr. Eastman when he was showing you this. These were his treasures. And it was quite a compliment.
Well, you know, he had one, a cocoa. Have you seen it? Tin, a cocoa tin that he claims is 50 years old.
No.
He keeps some washers or something in. A great little piece of, you know.
Yeah.
With the, my word.
Now he's got a, you see all those brass things, gas things.
Yeah.
Well, they are. You just can't buy those there, of course. And he just got them running all over the world.
Made all those things, made all those things, cut the hair, screwed it in.
called the divining rod. What did he call it?
The switch.
No, he had another name. Remember? Remember what he called it? It started with a C, I think. I can't think of it either. Oh, well. Maybe this will help improve my memory.
Yes. Well, after all, you've been jostled around up there for some time. You've got to freshen your brain a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. You go down there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Night tomorrow.
That's the end of this visit, this session, this long session with Mr. Eastman first, and then in the kitchen we talked and taped, and then we looked over his treasure trove, that trailer of his. Then we fixed the little catch on the trailer door that he had resurrected. And then we did all that writing, and then we had supper and reported all the time we ate.